Welcome to Iterate. I'm Renee Ritchie, and joining me is Guy English. How are you, Guy?
Good, but I thought this was debug.
All right.
Keep it. Just run with it.
Yeah. I forgot to ask Tammy how to pronounce her last name because I've never actually said it out loud.
Oh, well, you're going to love this one. You want a soundbite. Here's a good one for you. It's Coron, like moron, but with a C. And see, Coron. Now you'll never forget that.
Coron, is it Spanish?
No. It's my husband's name, so I think it's French-Canadian or Italian or something. I'm not really sure.
French-Canadian? We don't know anything about that.
I have a friend named English. He's from French Canada.
I'm from England, actually, if you really must know.
All right. So joining us tonight is Tammy Coron. How are you, Tammy?
I'm good, Renee. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. And you work for a little company called Nickelfish, the chief information officer of which is my co-host on Iterate. And to make the incestuous relationship complete, it is the company that has been making the iMore app for iMore.
That is true. Best company ever.
And when I say the company, it has mostly been you and Seth. Seth has been doing the jewelry maker's loop, checking every pixel, and you have just been knocking the code out, I believe, almost single-handedly.
Well, Nickelfish isn't a single-handedly type operation, but I am the lead on it, and it's a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun, absolutely.
Before we get to that, I'm just going to put it on rewind for a second and ask you, how did you get into development? And I know you've done a little bit of Android, a little bit of iOS, but how did you go into mobile development specifically?
Well, my mobile development started way back with the, I don't know if you guys remember the Palm Pilots.
Oh, yeah.
And I downloaded myself I think it was NS Basic. And I played with that for a little while and really didn't give it a whole much thought beyond that. I mean, I was a desktop applications developer, a web developer. You know, I come from the old days, so this Palm Pilot thing was kind of cool, but it was more of a hobby. And I really didn't start getting into full-fledged mobile development until I started working with Nickelfish. And it was, I didn't actually even start at Nickelfish as a mobile developer. I was looking for a job. And they were looking for a Ruby developer on a project, and it was strictly a contract type thing. And I didn't really know anything about what they were looking for, but I applied. I think it was like a Craigslist or a Dice ad or something. And I applied, sent the resume. I heard back from Justin and Seth and Dave. And one of their first questions, I believe, if I remember correctly, was, well, we need a Ruby developer. Do you have any Ruby experience? And I said, to be honest with you, no, but I live next to a Barnes & Noble, and I'm pretty sure I can get a book on it. So that's exactly what happened. They kind of let me get my feet wet with that, and the project went well, and they offered me full-time employment. And one of the first projects I had to do was for iOS. And I think it was like iOS 3 point something. And again, it was, I didn't have any iOS experience at all. I have a Lynda membership, and I started watching tutorials and read everything I could on the subject and just started developing. And lo and behold, I absolutely love it. It's my favorite platform now.
Now, you're an old school nerd.
Yeah, I am.
Because, I mean, Renee asked about you starting with mobile development, but when I heard you were going to be on, like I went and checked out your blog, you started on the TRS-80.
Yes, I did. When I was about 5, I wrote my first program. It was a terrible Word Basic program. It had spelling errors and all sorts of things, but you know, press W to go west and N to go north and look tree, and you would get a description back of the tree. And I mean, it was a lot of fun, but that's where I came from. It was just staring at a black screen with whitish gray text
and a blinking block cursor.
And a blinking block cursor. I mean, I grew up around really interesting people. My grandfather was an engineer. And I can tell you stories about him having me stand at one end of the living room holding a potato while he stood at the other. And he would hand me a light before he left. And when he would get to the other side, magically the light would go on. And I was completing the circuit, essentially. And it was just a lot of fun, and he taught me how to program from basic on up. And from there, for Christmas one year, my mom got me a Tandy 1000 and introduced me to the world of Sierra. I know you guys know Sierra, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So
Ken and Roberta Williams, King's Quest.
Yeah. Yep, King's Quest 3 was when I started playing, and that got me into gaming. It was a lot of fun. And from there, it just progressed to BBS systems, you know, FidoNet and running PC board and Wildcat. And people tell me that I'm kind of like the Homer Simpson of the tech world, because I just sort of fall into these things and I don't even plan it. It just happens.
That's a horrible analogy.
I just saw donuts. I don't know how that all.
Yeah. I mean, Homer's incompetent.
Binary.
Right. So what did you like about it? I mean, that 5 is really young to start. Like, did it feel like magic to you when that circuit completed and you sort of just kept chasing that, or what?
Well, my goal was to write something similar to Lunar Lander, and I still haven't done that yet. Yeah. But
me neither.
I love that game.
That was a great game though. And yeah, that would be a really fun project to try to sort of recreate.
I think it would be. I think it would be a lot of fun. But
so really the first thing you did was a text adventure?
The first thing I wrote was a text adventure. And it was more for my grandfather to show me this is how code works. You want to write a line of code, you want to print it out, you want to grab input from the user. And as a kid, you know, I was heavily into games. You know, this is, you know, a 5-year-old doesn't want to learn about math. Certainly me, I'm horrible with math, kind of like I'm horrible with geography and the moon. But yeah, it was a word game, and I loved it. In fact, I'm thinking about rehashing it for iOS and doing kind of like a choose your own adventure, but with a lot cooler stuff.
So what line of work was your grandfather in? Was he a programmer?
He was a programmer. He was an engineer. I can't tell you much more beyond that. I don't know the particulars, but I know for a good portion of his later years, he devoted himself to writing this program. And I couldn't even tell you what it did, but he was so proud of it.
And so that sort of it infected you with the joy of those kind of challenges and creating in that kind of way.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's a challenge, I'm there. And especially if I don't know what I'm doing, I'm even there more. It's the learning process for me that really gets me going. And I think that's why Nickelfish always is throwing me challenges and things that I've not done before, or things that I've done before that maybe I could do better. So it allows me to grow as a developer, as, you know, as a person. And it was the same thing growing up. I mean, my family is technical, but they're also creative and musical. So I'm able to draw in on all of those things. And you know, I'm lucky enough to do what I love to do. And all of the things I love to do, I love to write, I love to develop, I love to illustrate, and to be able to put these all together into one thing, that's just awesome.
Is there a commonality between sort of your interests that you can identify, or is it just sort of the endorphins that you get from doing these things?
I think the commonality is just the ability to create from nothing, something. You know, with developing, I'm able to create a program that someone can use, whether it's a web page or an iOS app or an Android app. I mean, for Nickelfish right now, I'm actually working on an Android project, which I haven't touched in a while. And it's kind of like riding a bike. It comes back to you. And boy, does Java come back to you, kind of like a bad bean dinner or something. But it's the creative process. You know, here, this is what we need you to do. Now you need to figure out how to do it. And it's the same thing with when I sit down to illustrate a character from one of my books. It's like, well, I need to be able to figure out what this person looks like before I can even write about them. You know, and it's all about creating something from nothing.
Like alchemy.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Okay, you know what? Let's put the nerdier stuff aside. Let's talk about your books for a bit. What do you write and why do you illustrate them?
I write things that make me feel good. I actually have a children's book out that I did the illustrating and the, you know, I wrote that. And that was a lot of fun. And it was the same kind
of
thing.
What's it called? Pimp It. Now, I'm sure there's people with kids out there and they should go and buy this book. So
The title of the book is Happy Birthday Puppy. It's a silly title, I know, but it's for kids, so it's all right.
And, don't apologize.
Well, that was kind of done. I guess I should back up a little bit. Maybe about 10 years ago or so, maybe 2005, something like that, 8 or 9 years ago. See, this is the whole math thing again.
Yeah, close enough. How old are your kids?
I have a 13-year-old and I have one that'll be 10 in a month. So
around the, you know, you had young children at the time.
I had young children and I had some medical issues going on. And, you know, when you're facing your own mortality, you tend to think about all the things you wanted to do and never had a chance to do. And I always wanted to write a book. I always wanted to illustrate a book and I never done it before. And when I, you know, woke up and things were okay and I was still here, I said, you know what? I said this to my mother. I said, there's no reason I can't do that. And she says, you're absolutely right. You need to do what you want to do before you don't have the time to do it. So with anything else, I went out and I learned as much as I could about the publishing business. I learned about, you know, what's the best tools to draw with on a computer. Cause at that point I was just using, you know, pencil and paper. And I learned how to, believe it or not, use Flash for drawing. And, you know, I learned how to use InDesign to get everything looking the way that I wanted it to look. And it came together. You know, it's about a puppy who's celebrating his birthday and his friends are coming to his party. And, you know, I created a companion website to go along with it. And I had to learn how to write Flash games because, I mean, it's a kid's thing. You want kids to go there and have fun. So again, I was able to take the writing and the illustrating and the tech and meld it into something that was really kind of fun to do. And I didn't do much beyond that, you know, because I'm one of those types of people who I have 100 projects going on at any one time. And I do a little on this one, then I move to the next one, and then I'll go back to the other one. But, you know, in the meantime, I've started probably 20 or 30 more.
Well, no, I think that's worthwhile. And I think what you ended up producing is, I mean, you say you started with King's Quest. Would you say that your book and the story and the animation, sorry, the illustration is sort of encapsulates a lot of the ideas that were a lot of the fun that we had playing King's Quest as children?
Yeah, I'm actually working on another book now. It's more of a chapter book for older kids, you know, anywhere between the ages of 10 and up, really. And it's definitely more geared towards fantasy, and that's a lot of fun. That one is a lot of fun to write. But that would definitely draw on some of the old King's Quest type fantasy world.
So do you enjoy writing more than coding, or is it all just different aspects of sort of a desire to create?
I say that I enjoy them equally. I don't know that there's a project where I haven't been able to use all three within the project. You know, I'm writing, I'm in the process of writing a tutorial for learning Objective C. And again, I'm able to use the writing, the tech, and the, you know, the illustrations, because I'm doing all the illustrations for the work as well. So, can you tell I'm a control freak? Does that come through?
You have a singular vision, is how I term it.
Yeah, control freak has a negative vibe on it. I think you're, you sound product focused or output focused in that you know what you want to create and that, you know, you'll do what it takes to create it.
Exactly. And it's kind of like, because I also do back end development and database development. And whenever I'm speccing out a database design, I always tell whomever is looking for this database, I ask them, well, before I can even put it on paper or even in my mind, I don't want to know what you want to put into it. I want to know what you want to get out of it. Once I know what you want out of it, I could tell you how to design it, but I can't tell you what to put in it. You know, we got to start on the other side of the stick there.
Right. Like if the client comes to you with like, here's the primary keys, that's a non-starter, right? Like it doesn't help you organize their data, or it doesn't help you solve the problem that they're trying to solve.
Right. I kind of approach it from the, well, if you were to go to this system and run a report, what kind of information would you want to see on that report? As opposed to what kind of information do you think you would put in a system to get back out of? So yeah, definitely end product focused, I think, it sounds better than control freak. You're right.
So, okay. So how do you like doing backend stuff? Because I would imagine from enjoying writing and illustration, you would want to be closer to the consumer, to the user. Than, well, you know, messing around with the database.
I'm laughing because anyone who knows me really well knows that I'm deathly afraid of people. So I want to be as far away from the consumer as possible.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I do much better with ones and zeros and inanimate objects than I do with real live human beings.
Well, I mean, we're not hitting it off at all. So I'm not surprised that you don't like people.
Yeah, my son says, Mom, well, I don't understand. You're good with people. Why are you afraid of them? I said, no, I'm not afraid of them. I just, you know, I like to keep to myself.
I've got projects to do.
Yeah, it's all work. I have work to do. I can't do it.
You're not afraid. You just don't like people.
Yeah. Well, most people are okay.
Yeah. So do you enjoy the abstraction? Like a lot of writing software is sort of coming up with a conceptual model and trying to decide upon the abstractions that you're going to employ. Sort of database planning or spec definitely has a bit of that, or a lot of that. I can see that being true also for storytelling through writing. Certainly is true for illustration. Is that what you enjoy? Like rather than... It doesn't seem that you set out to thrill people intentionally. It seems that you set out to do something for yourself that you're proud of. Is that fair?
That's 100% fair. I just had a conversation with someone not too long ago about how, yes, this might be something that someone has contracted me to do, whether it be a personal project, you know, as a contractor or something that Nickelfish has asked me to work on for one of their customers. And first and foremost, it's my project. It's my thing. And if I don't do it right for me, it's never going to be right for the guy who's getting it. So it's 100% about me pleasing me. I mean, I've always been an overachiever. If I don't do it perfectly, or at least attempt to do it perfectly, in my mind, I've failed. And right. I have people tell me all the time, you know, you're crazy. This, like Renee says, this is a great app, and I'm nitpicking it. I'm still nitpicking it. It's crazy. I need to chill out.
Are you ever satisfied with your output?
No. And that's a terrible thing to say because it's good.
I don't think it's terrible.
I you know what it is? I believe that I can do a good job today, but man, you should come back tomorrow. Wait till you see what I can do then. It's kind of like one of those things. I'm always learning. I'm always trying to improve upon what I'm learning on. And if I were to say I know everything or I can do everything the best that there's to do it, I have nowhere to go. But if I have that little part of me that says, you know what, this is good, this will work right now, but I know you can do better the next time, then I have somewhere to go and grow.
So how do you choose to pull the trigger and release something? Whether it be a book or an illustration or an app or anything, you know?
At some point, I just have to say that this is as good as it's going to get right now. And just wait until you see version 2.
Yeah. Was that something you had to learn the hard way, or like how did you come to that?
It's just that at some point, the more you tinker with it, the more you have an opportunity to break it. You know, certainly with being able to do my illustrations on the computer makes it easier because of the undo button. But if I have a pencil in my hand, I can sit there and I can erase until I'm right through the paper. And at some point, I'm going to run out of paper or out of an eraser. So it was a learned thing. I mean, there's a lot of work that I've done that I've crumpled up and tossed in the trash because it didn't meet my standards. That doesn't mean it wouldn't have met somebody else's standards. But I had to learn that, like I said, eventually I'm going to run out of paper. I got to stop and just be happy with what I have and look towards the next thing that I do.
So just to get concrete for a bit, you wrote the iMore app.
Yes.
And Renee tells me that you scrapped the whole thing and rewrote it.
She came up, we had the iMore app, and I think it was 2 or 3 weeks out before we launched it. And Tammy says, you know, in my own spare time, I've completely rewritten this thing, and I'd like you guys to take a look at it.
Yes, and then I begged for forgiveness and said, please use the new one.
You know what? So I've got it, and I've been checking it out for the past hour and a bit. It's a very good app.
Thank you.
What did you scrap and why? Like, what was the impetus behind that? What was your thought process?
I wanted to make sure that not only did iMore have the best app that I could do for them and that Nickelfish could do for them in the App Store, but that it was a solid app. And I knew that when we did the first release and even the update, we were the first release we were supporting iOS 5, and then the second update to that, which was, I think it was what, 1.1?
Yep.
We switched over to 6. And I knew that 2.0, it was going to be a major update. And I knew that there was iOS 5 stuff still within the source code that didn't need to be there. And I knew that a lot of people had some things that they wanted to see. And I knew that from the time that we wrote the first version and the update to the time where we were going to release this one, I personally had learned so much more about the language and just, you know, development in general that I for me couldn't release that other one. It was fine. I mean, they, like Renee said, we were only a couple weeks out from releasing it, but I wouldn't have been happy with it. I would have done whatever I was asked to do if we didn't have time to polish that one, my weekend warrior build. I would have certainly, you know, spent as much time getting the other one up to speed, but I still personally wouldn't have been happy. And when Seth and I spoke about, you know, what's left to do before we get this build out, I said, well, let me tell you something I did. And he was a little apprehensive, but he's a great guy and he puts his faith in his developers. And that's great because if you're going to have these really cool, creative, intelligent people working for you and with you, you have to trust them. And they do because they hire the best of the best. I don't know why they hired me, but they do hire the best of the best. And he said, all right, I'll tell you what, if you can, you know, have X, Y, and Z done by such and such date and it's a solid app and I believe in you and Renee is cool with it, then we'll do it. And thankfully, Renee, you were cool with it because I wouldn't have been able to sleep at night if you weren't.
I have this thing where I go to restaurants and let the chef tell me what, you know, what he makes really well. I go to, barbers and ask them, you know, they're better at hair than me. So when there's a developer, you know so much more than I will ever know about this stuff. I prefer to let your expertise guide me.
Well, thank you. And sometimes we're right. Sometimes not so much.
What's the process like with Seth and at Nickelfish? Like you speak to a client, you sort of try to get a spec design and then what? Like what happens?
Well, I work primarily with my producer. I'm not going to attempt to say her last name because I'll just end up butchering it, but her first name is Beata. And I have to tell you, she is one of the best producers that I've had the pleasure of working with. I put in long hours, not because I'm forced to, not because my workload is heavy, none of those reasons. I do it because I enjoy what I do. And I'm lucky enough to have a producer who also enjoys what she does. I mean, her and I were speaking last night over IM. It was, you know, somewhere around 11 o'clock at night. And, the process is she'll do whatever, you know, Seth and Justin and the guys, they'll secure the job. They'll assign it to a producer. There's teams and they choose the best talent for that particular job. And if it's Beata's team, it's, you know, I'm the senior developer on that. She's got a senior web developer and she's got a designer and so on and so forth. So they'll draw up wireframes. If it's an iOS application that I'm working on, they'll usually come to me and say, is this possible or is that possible? Or do you anticipate having any issues with this? And if I give them the thumbs up, or if it's already a thumbs up, they'll send me wireframes. And then I'll start building like a dummy mock-up in Xcode and kind of like get these fake screens together so we can kind of get a feel of how things are going. And then I'll usually get creative through Beata and the designers. And this is where a lot of strange things begin to happen. And I say strange because it's like an industry strange. some developers want slices done for them. And some developers like me prefer to have the layered PSD. And I know, Renee, you and I have talked about this before. And I even just did a write-up on this. I prefer to have a layered file given to me. And then I can do my slices the way that they're going to fit for my development needs, you know, for the app. And then I'll just start building it. But there's this huge period of time, whether it be, you know, while I'm driving to the store or getting myself ready for bed or even, you know, I don't have a TV, so I don't do a whole lot of watching TV. But if I'm reading or whatever, my brain is still going. I'm still thinking, well, what's the best way that I could build this object or communicate with that back-end service? So that's a lot of what my process is. I don't do the actual coding until I kind of have a game plan already formulated in my head, because I hate writing code and then ripping it out and rewriting it.
So you don't sketch your code really. You sort of rumble it around in your brain until you're pretty confident about the structure?
Yeah. I mean, just even with this Android project that I'm working on now, there was this, I wasn't exactly sure how I wanted to handle the back-end services, you know, what. Yes, I could have written, because it was for a user service, and I could have just written it for the specific one-off case that this user object would have been used for, or I can think bigger picture and write this object in such a way that it's more reusable code. And before I even start writing it, I need to figure out in my head, well, how much time do I have, and is this really going to be a benefit, you know? Usually it is. I mean, if you write yourself into a corner, that's bad, because then you got to rewrite it. But yeah, there's this whole process. I mean, my husband at dinner, he'll look at me and he'll know I'm coding in my head, and he'll, you know, snap his fingers and you come back to me. You're going to finish chewing your food or you're going to let it fall out of your mouth?
So do you feel good when you have to rewrite something, or do you feel that you've sort of failed your initial, I guess, mental reconnaissance of it?
Now, the only time it's a failure is if you can't learn from it. If you do something and it doesn't work, and you realize that it doesn't work, and you accept the fact that it doesn't work, and then you change it and it does work, it's not a failure. It's a learning experience. Mm-hmm. The only time it becomes a failure is when you give up. When you throw your hands up in the air and you say, I can't do that. It's a failure. And Renee, I think you and I just had a situation where I think I sent you an email and said, I don't know if I can do that. And then what was it, 20 minutes later, I said, okay, it's done.
It was about 9 o'clock on Sunday night, and we were trying to, I think it was the gestures between articles, and Tammy was saying, you know, this just doesn't work, or it might have been landscape. Yeah, actually, I think it was Tammy introduced landscape to the iOS app, and because Seth and I have our iPhones locked in portrait mode, we didn't know she'd done that. And then Nick Arnott, who's at Noir on Twitter, he said, you guys are, you know, making a new version of Amore app. Can I take a look at it? And he is a QA monster. And all of a sudden, we get this list of things about the landscape mode. And I said, oh, wow, it's got a landscape mode. And then Tammy said, you know, this is going to be really difficult in landscape. And she came back, 20 minutes later and said, you know, that's not a good answer. I'm fixing all of this now.
Yeah, I can't sit with, I can't do that. Or let's try this workaround until a better one comes around. It bugs me. It really does. And again, it's not a failure until you say I quit. And I don't say, someone in addition to calling me Homer Simpson told me I was kind of like a pit bull. When I set my sights on something, I'm there. I'm there until I'm done with whatever it is I've set out to do.
I'm just trying to picture a pit bull drawn in like Homer Simpson style.
Running a pit bull?
Yeah.
I know what I'm drawing tonight.
So you've done Ruby, you've done a bunch of backend stuff, you've done a bunch of database stuff, Android and iOS. Do you have a preferred environment? And do you care, or do you just really want to build stuff?
Well, I do have a preferred environment now, but I almost don't care. Mm-hmm. I enjoy working with the iOS stuff. It's just such a sweet environment. I really, really enjoy it, but I don't know that it's a preference. I mean, I'm teaching my son Python, and that's kind of cool too. You know, it's kind of like if I were to say that any one application or anything needed to be done with this language and only this language, I'm really cutting myself off to a whole other host of opportunity. You know, it's kind of like if you ask 25 developers how to develop something, you'll get 25 different answers, and probably most of them are right. I love everything. You're right. I love to develop. I love to create. Doesn't matter.
I think you're the most positive person we've ever had on this.
Yeah, well, you know, gotta fake it till you make it.
But you're not faking it. That's what's good about it.
Contagious.
So one thing, and you just touched on it, when I learned to program, it was, you know, basically I was typing in stuff from, from the back of a book or a magazine, like testing little basic programs. And it sounds to me like you had a similar introduction
yes.
through your grandfather. And he just said that you're teaching your son Python.
Yes.
Do you feel that kids these days have the same kind of opportunity to sort of immerse themselves in development that we had when we were kids? Because it feels to me that when we were younger, software wasn't so sophisticated that we felt that we could never reach its capabilities.
Well, I you said I'm a positive person, and now I'm going to prove that I'm not. So I do take great issue with the lack of what they're teaching in computers in schools today. And I do understand that my situation and my children's situation does differ from a lot of people's. I mean, I have friends who don't know what a home key is or how to use a mouse, and then you've got my kids. So I understand why the schools do what they do. But when my son comes home and he tells me, Mom, I learned how to drag a file into Microsoft Word so the picture would show up on the screen. It really bugs the heck out of me. These kids should be introduced to, first of all, they got to get Windows out of the schools. Did I say that? they do. The whole world is not Microsoft. There's a whole world of different operating systems. I mean, Ubuntu, all these Linux builds. I mean, these kids have so much opportunity and nobody's showing it to them. And that is another one of my side projects. I want to get kids more actively involved in development and show them what they can do with a computer.
I think that's a terrific idea. So what is wrong with the curriculum that you know, you see, you have, you know, well, not firsthand, but secondhand interaction with through your kids? What would you have them change?
if they could teach them basic file management, let's start there. I can't tell you how many people I have talked to that don't understand what is my computer or how come I have this in my email and how do I put it in documents or files or what's iPhoto and how do I – nobody understands file management. You know, if they would teach the children file management and then, you know, explain to them that it's more than just word processing or Excel, you know, that these kids don't need to learn Microsoft Word and Excel. Give them a text editor. Teach them about the basic principles behind what a computer does and what it's for.
Sure.
It's just now, it upsets me.
Do you need to teach file management or does file management need to go away? Just to be philosophical about it for a second there, you know?
If you don't understand what a file is and how it's stored on your hard drive, you're going to be confused. You know, you don't have to understand what a file is, although it would be helpful, but you do need to understand where it lives and why it lives there.
Is that true for iOS and you know, sort of the way that consumer electronics seem to be going?
If they're going to have the kids on the desktops, yeah, in the schools and on the laptops, yes. I mean, I just posted a comment on Facebook the other day. I'm so aggravated that I, on YouTube and whatnot, that you can't, some of these videos, it comes up and says, you cannot view this on your mobile device. And I posted on Facebook, come on, who has, you know, who uses a desktop anymore? We're all on our mobile devices. So you make a valid point about file management. But if they're going to teach the computers in school, and not the handheld devices, then yes, you absolutely have to know about file management.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm actually just playing devil's advocate a bit. I agree with you that the basic principles upon which modern computing are built are really important for kids to understand.
There's a great book out on the market now. I don't remember who wrote it, but the name of the book is Hello World. And that's actually the book that I'm using to help my son with Python. If the schools were to bring that book in and teach from that book, that has everything they need. And that will teach the kids everything that they're going to need to know about computers. Now, you're going to be a devil's advocate and say, well, you know, not everyone wants to develop. And that's true. Yeah, that's him. Warren Sandy and Carter Sandy. That's who wrote that book. It's a good book. And if you just give him a basic, you know, here's a computer. Let me teach you file management. Let me teach you what a file is. Let me teach you, you know, if you want to write something in text, here's a text editor. If you want to get fancy, they've got Microsoft Word. They've got OpenOffice. They got to give them more variety and diversity, I think. And you know what would be awesome? If everyone got an iPad.
Yeah. My friend Frisher Spears has been sort of spearheading that with his school, where he's a huge advocate of one-to-one deployment of, you know, one iPad per kid.
Yeah.
And I think that's a terrific idea. The one thing that sort of bugs me about iPads is that you can't develop directly on them. You can, there's a couple of apps that let you do it. But I'd love to see that space sort of opened up a bit more.
Well, I just downloaded on my iPad Coda or Codea. Let me see.
Codea, yeah.
Yeah, Codea. And I also, what is it, App Cooker, which allows you to do mockups right on your iPad.
Yeah.
And I think the two of them together are kind of cool. But yeah, they'd have to do something.
Yeah.
But it certainly would allow the schools to have more interactive content for the kids. I can't tell you how many times through the lower grades that my sons came home and their books were falling apart, you know?
Right.
So
I learned
Logo
in school. That's what they taught me.
Really?
Turtle Graphics.
Logo's great though.
Yep. I should make Logo for the iPad.
Do they not have it? It seems like that's a gimme. They really should have that.
It would be kind of cool.
Yeah. I was never good at it. But I liked it. I don't know how to describe that. One of the things I liked about King's Quest games and, you know, games of that sort of era was that you could sort of envision yourself eventually being able to make that. I don't know if you can look at a lot of modern software as a child and say, yes, I can see how this is done and I could do it. Do you think that's a problem? Is it sort of the cliff now is so huge between what an amateur can hope to accomplish and what professionals do that it's a little bit off-putting?
Yeah, but in the same token, you can say that, you know, there's so much more opportunities for indie developers, no matter what their age, that there wasn't before. I mean, when you and I were getting into this business, you needed some type of middleman to handle it. Yeah. Now you kind of don't need that. And there are people that are trying to bridge the gap. I mean, the Scratch is out there that, you know, my kids have looked at. I don't think it's what they're looking for, but kids younger who are just getting into it, Scratch is an excellent alternative. You know, things like Game Salad is another one that can help people come in and, you know, learn how to do things without actually being a developer. You know, mm-hmm. It's that snap and click and point and shoot type of mentality, but it allows them to see immediate results, you know, and that's key for kids. I know when I was doing it, if I wasn't getting immediate results, I was really agitated. And I think that's why my grandfather pushed me to word games, you know, cause I was like, whoa, I can type that on the keyboard and it can come back and tell me what to do based on what I just typed in. That's cool.
Yep. I still work that way. I need a quick feedback loop is invaluable for me when I'm writing code. And I think I gravitated towards doing graphics programming mostly because of that. You know, I could type something and then I could see what happened and then I would fix it.
That graphic stuff, that kills me because it's all math. And once you throw math in there, I told my son the other day, I said, you know, I'm okay with, you know, a couple of numbers, you add them together. I said, but now you're throwing letters in there. I don't know what you're doing.
Well,
this algebra thing, the whole math stuff right over my head.
I'm actually awful at math.
Really? And you still do graphics? Like, that's crazy.
I'm awful at math, but I'm pretty good at abstractions.
Okay.
So once you kind of wrap your head around what multiplying two matrices together does, you don't really need to know what is actually happening. Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe, but you know, the way that you do like a layer tree or view hierarchy in 2D is not that much different from the way that you lay out a 3D scene. It's just that the transforms get a little bit more complicated. But you don't need to think about the math behind it per se. You just need to think about what the math is doing. Does that make sense?
It does. I think the word math intimidates me. But I have to be honest with you. I just, not too long ago, really started to get my hands dirty with Cocos 2D. And, you know, and again, things like that, those frameworks out there, they do make these things more attainable.
Cocos 2D is great.
I'm doing a zombie game with it. It's awesome. I love it.
And wait, you're doing it with your son, right? If I understand correctly.
Oh, yeah. You read that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, though, they tend to peter off a little bit because it's not instant gratification for them.
Sure.
And I think we all suffer from that, don't we?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But they're helping, you know, They're awesome.
So how's that? I thought that was an awesome idea that you're going to sit down with your son and try to make a game. What was the impetus behind that?
You know, it was just like all my Homer Simpson moments. We just sort of fell into it. We were at the dinner table.
You try to get a better cartoon character.
Well, listen, if I thought the lunar and Mars were the same place, I think we're good with Homer Simpson.
I'm taking that. I'm not having that.
But yeah, we were just sitting around one day and we were talking and we were like, hey, you know what? We should do a game. And that's what we decided to do. So my younger son, he's really good, you know, artistically. So he's got himself a little journal and a notebook and he started drawing up some characters for this game. And I started teaching him how to draw in Flash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's only 9 now and he doesn't have a high tolerance for sitting at the computer for hours and hours and hours and doing it. So it's a slow process.
Sure.
And my other son, if he doesn't see, I mean, immediate results, he's not interested at all. So what we've allowed him to handle is being the weapons expert. So he's the think engine behind it. You know, hey, what can I do with a flamethrower to make this level go away? And, you know, with him, I printed off some, design sheets, you know, with little square to spec type things. And I said, just take a pencil, draw stick figures, because he's not really that creative as far as, you know, artistically creative. Yeah. I said, just draw stick figures. You tell, you know, me and your brother where you want to put people. We'll draw the people and we'll get it coded. But he's doing the level design for us. And my other son is doing some of the creative work. And it's just, I don't get to spend a lot of time with the kids just because I'm always working.
For and, Renee, yeah.
Well, and they're, you know, they're at their age where they're, no, not for Renee. I just caught that. Yeah. No.
It's a hard taskmaster.
They're, you know, they have their friends and I'm mom, you know, they don't want to be around mom anymore, but to be able to work with them, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. And we're actually working on another app. This is what I was saying before about, I just have all these ideas and I have to start it. And then I get another one and I have to start that one. But we're also doing another app where it's another zombie type. It's a rating system. And that's fun. And that's actually what led me to download App Cooker onto my iPad, because I needed a quick way to prototype this, because I wanted to see before I even started developing the back end what I wanted to get out of the front end. You know, how do I want people to get around? And the kids' job on this one is they're to go and rate these different items, you know, various items of various types of items, give them a zombie survival rating and rate it. I gave him a worksheet. I said, and this is where it gets really sad. Don't tell anyone. Of course, this is going to be broadcast, so everyone will know. I'm paying them $1 for each thing they give me a rating on.
Mechanical Turk.
Yeah.
So what are they, like 9 and 13, and you're encouraging them to watch Walking Dead?
No, they don't get to watch The Walking Dead. No. In fact, I'm probably, according to them, you're the strictest mom out there. We're not allowed to do anything. Well, I let you live. That's good, right?
I let you live.
But no, they get to go out there and dream about, you know, the zombie apocalypse and what do you think would help you survive? You know, you need water, right? So you have to live next to a stream, a running brook.
Right.
I don't know if Renee even knows this, but in addition to being a top-notch geek and creative whack job, I'm also a survivalist. So if you need a freestanding shelter built in the woods, I'm your gal.
We just expect every American to be a survivalist at this point.
They should be, given the way shit's going. Oops. Well, can I say that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I had friends had dropped their kids off for me to babysit, and they were younger. My boys were, I think they were 7 and 10 or something. They were young, and their friends came over. I said, sure, I'll babysit. And when mom came back to pick up her kids out in the backyard, we had built a one-bedroom freestanding shelter from debris. And she was shaking her head. She says, you know, I drop my kids off to most moms and they bake cookies. You build a shelter. I said, yeah, if you bring them back next week, I'll teach them how to purify their urine and drink it. So she came back, which I guess was good.
We'll make still suits for everybody.
Yeah, I got my hands in everything.
Walking Dead is an educational series, it seems.
What's behind that?
Again, it's a control thing. I don't want to have to rely on anybody to, you know, take care of me and get the job done.
Being fiercely independent.
Yes. Yeah. And
I don't know. Fiercely may be an adjective too far, but.
Well, I also have to balance out the geekness, you know. So with that, I ride motorcycles. I'm an avid shooter. So it balances out the geekness.
Gets you off the computer for moments of time.
It does. I mean, this past weekend, we all went riding and, my younger son, he flipped his quad and threw himself 25 feet. So we're kind of an adventurous family here who happens to have a computer in every corner and somebody's developing something. Even my husband, he just built a walking robot that we named Tesla. So it's an interesting life here in the Coron household.
I feel that you guys are going to win World War III.
You know, it was funny because I think it was Seth or maybe Justin. I don't know. Do you guys remember the movie Tremors?
Yep.
Do you remember Reba McEntire and her husband in that movie?
Yep.
Yeah, I think Seth or Justin said, you know, I imagine that your house is very much like theirs. And he's probably right. I know you have nowhere to go with that, right?
the conversation's ended. I mean, all I'm doing is I'm just picturing the artwork for the poster for Tremors, which is kind of a riff off Jaws, right? Like they're in a desert and somebody's standing there and there's this worm thing sort of coming up from below.
But it'd be a zombie worm in this case.
That's right. Right. Everything's a zombie these days. Including me, those hours I keep, yeah.
Well, your avatar, as I'm staring at the Skype window here, is a skull with an eye patch, a hat, and a bandana at a computer coding.
Yeah, and it's not too far off. The only difference is I don't have the eye patch.
Tammy, when you're developing for iOS or for Android now, you like to push the limits. You always like to try new things. Are there stuff you'd like to see from Apple or from Google that would sort of make your job easier or let you do things that you can't do right now?
I think with Google, I wish they would not have picked up Java. I mean, I don't like it. It's terrible. And I know that some people love it and swear by it, but every time I have to program in Java, a little piece of me dies.
So I also don't like Java, but what do you not like about it specifically? Is it the way the exceptions are handled? Is it the way that everything's a class? Like, well...
No, it's not so much the classes. I mean, it just seems so my son said it perfect the other day. He said he's a Minecraft hacker, which is all Java. And he says to me, "Mom, I don't understand. You know, it works one time and then it doesn't work again. And then it'll work again." He says, "It's the same piece of code. Why does it work sometimes and not other times?" And it seems just to be the nature of the beast. I guess it seems very messy to me, and I've had the misfortune of working with some not so very good programmers in the past. I'm very fortunate that every one of the programmers at Nickelfish is very good, so I don't get to see bad programming anymore. Mm-hmm. But when I did, a lot of it was in Java, and I think because Java is an easy language to learn, you have a lot of people who just abuse what it can and can't do.
I don't know if it's an easy language to learn. I think it is the language that people choose to teach.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's you're 100% right. And I think another reason people gravitate to it is because it's multi-platform.
You know,
yes.
Well, theoretically, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, like we're getting back to the curriculum thing, but I think what schools teach lags behind sort of, you know, where the reality of development is at any given point.
Yeah, but as far as what else can iOS do, I mean, every time a new update comes out, whether it's, you know, a development tool or some new API available in the OS, I'm just always blown away. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many cool things that came out with iOS 6. I mean, I was having to write my own like grid view table views, you know, to flick through pictures and whatnot and set it up in a grid. And when they came out with the collection view and just it was like, whoa, really? Now I don't have to write all that stuff? I can just do this? Really?
Yeah, UI collection view was the rock star of this previous WWDC. It was huge.
Yeah, even that the refresh control, Renee, that we put into version two, yeah. You know, previously we had to write that ourselves. I mean, there are still cases where you're going to need to write it because you want it to look a certain way.
Well, right now it's World of Goo to refresh, really. But I mean, it does the motion work.
I love that game.
That control does look weird, but
it's gloopy.
Yeah, I think you guys did the right thing to keep it exactly like it is with the system.
Well, you did that in general, Tammy, right? Like you said, you the rewrite that you did, your I forget what you called it, your weekend war build.
Weekend warrior.
Weekend warrior build. Yeah, you gutted a lot of the old code and you replaced it with a lot of iOS 6 specific stuff.
I didn't actually gut it. I mean, that was a brand new file, new project. Give it a name and start over.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is pretty gutsy.
Well, again, it was a personal project, and you know, I knew that if I could pull it off, it would be totally cool.
Right.
If I knew that I couldn't pull it off, nobody knew about it, so it would be okay.
Yeah. You've still got something to ship, right?
So, yeah.
What were the major architectural differences between the Weekend Warrior build and the previous build?
Well, the refresh control was one of them. The 100%, you know, Twitter and Facebook integration was one of them. You know, because prior to that, we had Facebook wasn't in for iOS 5. So we were able to pull that in. The loading screens, we now flashed up more of a in-your-face kind of loader as opposed to something that was really tiny and you couldn't see. So that was all brand new. And one of the biggest things was, I don't know if you happened to notice the size, but it's only about 1/4 of the size of the old project.
The file, and, yeah.
Yeah. So I can't even, it wouldn't be fair for me to say that I yanked out a bunch of code. I just didn't write a bunch of code. And it's because, number one, I learned how to do things differently, which is why you see the app being so fast. In version 2. And the other thing was I grew as a developer and I didn't have to rely on other frameworks. I wrote my own. And I was able to take out a lot of bloat by not using other frameworks.
And to the stuff you were talking about earlier, we were doing a gesture to move between articles and you were almost like an eye doctor. Do you like Blurry Away 1 or Blurry Away 2, Blurry Away 3 or Blurry Away 4? You were literally iterating once. I was getting a test flight built once every 5 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, I think that was that Sunday, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm nuts. I wanted it to be good. I mean, you know, I love the iMore family. I love the Nickelfish family. And this is, for me, kind of like my flagship project, you know? I feel very close to this project. There was some discussion. My workload was kind of heavy a couple months back. I was working multiple projects and Seth approached me. He says, how would you feel if we were to hand iMore off to another developer? And I said, well, I'd hate you. No, I didn't say that.
That's when you stabbed him.
That's when I stabbed him. Yeah, he might not have felt it right away, but it's a slow, painful thing. But no, I said, let me, you know, if you need to do that, you need to do it. I mean, you have to make the tough decisions. That's how come you're in the position you're in. But I would really, really, really like it if we could find some way for me to continue to do that. And he knows how dear this project is to my heart. And again, he had faith in me. And his faith in me is what makes me a better programmer. Just like his nitpicking of, you know, Pixel Perfect when I first started at Nickelfish. All that did for me is make me a better developer. It didn't make me, you know, not like Seth because he was picking on my pixel being off by one. No, that made me realize, you know what? I'm turning out stuff that can be better. And he's showing me how it can be better. And I'm learning from that. And that's why I did this Weekend Warrior build, because everything that he taught me, everything that I learned, and just, you know, just in general, I knew it could be a better product. And I think it is. I think it came out good.
Does that introspective attitude come naturally to you? Or was that something that you learned over your career?
Well, I think the life that I've led has allowed me to look at things that, you know, other people might cringe and run away from. It's allowed me to take it and look at it and think, you know, what can I learn from this? Because clearly something went wrong And how could I change it to make it not go wrong in the future? You know, my mother used to tell me, she says, if you do the same thing over and over and over again and you expect different results, you're not going to get them. You know, you have to learn from this. If you're walking down a street and there's a hole in the middle of the street and you keep walking in it, well, at one point you're going to have to step to the left or right and learn from that and not walk into it, but walk around it. Don't look at these people who are giving you critiques or advice or pointing out your faults as people who are attacking you. Look at them as people who are trying to help you grow. They may not know they're trying to help you grow. They might just really be attacking you, but don't look at it that way. It's all about perspective. It really is.
If your kids were getting into development, you know, in a few years, what advice would you give them in terms of how to sort of pursue their career?
Well, I could tell you for a fact that my one son his plan is to go into the military. He's actually starting ROTC, junior ROTC next year.
Do you guys are you like a military family at all?
My dad was a Green Beret.
Okay.
So, Army brat.
Yeah, I was just curious with with the survivalist stuff, and I was just curious. So there's a history of service in your family.
Yeah, and before I got old, I was actually a fireman, if you can believe that.
Really?
So, yeah. Cool. Again,
that's awesome.
You know, somebody dared me. Oh, you're too small to be a fireman. Oh yeah, watch. I said, you know, if you're going to go into the military, that's great. You know, I'm very proud of you. I don't want you on the front lines, but you have to do what's going to make you happy. So I'm trying to encourage him to learn.
Does he have a service picked out?
No, not yet. He just
wants to serve. That's all.
He just wants to serve. He wants to serve his country, and I think that's great. But I don't want him getting shot at. So.
No, yeah.
So
nobody
I
should get
him.
Shot at.
Nobody
yeah.
should get shot at. And I told him, I said, why don't you, take a look at Blender and get into some of the 3D development and see if you can start doing something with engineering or, weapons manufacturing or, medical manufacturing or something. See if there's some other way that you can serve your country that won't get you shot. And with my other son, I encouraged him when he was learning Flash, he was getting a little upset because he couldn't. I don't know if you have ever drawn in Flash before. It's actually really fun.
Yeah. A little bit. I love that you like Flash because I think it's often it's looked down upon a lot by sort of the iOS development community or the Mac people,
No. It's great. When I draw in Flash, it's kind of like molding clay. It's playing with Play-Doh. And that's what I was trying to get across to my younger son. I said, don't worry if you messed up her eye. Just hit the undo and just push it around with your finger. Pretend your mouse is your finger and just mold it to how you want to. And don't worry about how I think it came out. And don't even worry about how you think it came out. If you don't like it, just keep at it until you do like it. Right. Rome wasn't built in a day. He says, Mom, what, Rome? What? we'll go over that another time. But just keep at it. Do it because you want to, and don't worry about what other people think. People are so self-absorbed, they don't care about what you've got going on.
Right. Well, I think that's the best thing about drawing is that anything like that, you don't need to share it with anybody so long as you have sort of the piece of the creativity or the creative process for yourself. I think that's it's the means. Well, the journey is more important than where you're going.
It's the expression.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, it goes back to what I said before. Every project that I work on, whether it's an independent contract or work that's come through Nickelfish, it's my project first. And if I don't do it to my liking, then why bother?
Are there things you still want to do? Are there languages you still want to try or platforms you still want to develop for?
Well, I want to get my hands on WebOS. Yeah, I know it's dead, but that would just be really cool.
Powering LG televisions, it's not dead.
Yeah, but whatever I can do,
Do you care about BlackBerry 10 at all?
Well, I didn't until somebody, Renee, showed it to me.
We had a conference call, Marcus, who
started Mobile Nations and, you know, still runs Mobile Nations, decided to code the BlackBerry 10 app for CrackBerry himself. So he spent a month with the Cascades API and made, I think, empirically one of the best apps available for BlackBerry 10 right now. I mean, it's pure Cascades. It uses all the gestures, which are the heart and soul of BlackBerry.
Is it out now?
Yep. It is available in BlackBerry App World. And it's a really good app. And we did a call with Tammy because they built this whole Mobile Nations Passport login system, which is really slick. And it lets you log into any site using an existing account or Twitter or Facebook or Google or Microsoft or whatever. And we were looking at integrating it into the iMore app. And it turns out we're going to have to do it in version 2.1. But Tammy started making fun of Marcus, you know, almost in a playground sense for playing with BlackBerry 10. And he started rattling off a lot of the cool stuff that he could do with it.
I'd love to see that. Do you have a BB10 device, Renee?
Yep.
I'd love to see it. Yeah.
Yep.
So that doesn't interest you at all, Tammy? Or is that just like, you know, sort of faux turning your nose up at something, but really it's mostly a joke, you know?
Yeah. Turning my nose up is definitely mostly for the joke. I mean, the big joke around the, you know, I don't want to get beat up on the playground if I tell anyone I have a BlackBerry. But I do. After seeing that, I might poke a toe in the water again. I mean, I've developed for BlackBerry in the past, and again, Java. I hated it. You know, I wanted to shoot myself, to be honest with you. It's horrible. But I think that conference call might have woke me up a little bit, and I'd like to play with it, I think, for sure. I'll never turn anything down. I mean, you know, it was the same thing with, hey, do you know Ruby? Well, no, I'll go get a book. You know, you need something done? I'll do it.
I just like the idea that they took QNX, which is this real-time embedded operating system that runs cars and nuclear power plants, and spent, you know, 3 years giving it a face.
Yeah.
That to me makes it really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, see, now I got to check it out.
No, QNX is great. And just for the listeners, real-time doesn't mean that it happens instantly. It means that it happens within a given quantum of time. So you can be more deterministic. So it's not that it's like super duper extra faster than everything. It just means that every operation is guaranteed to take a certain amount of time. And that means that you can plan things a lot better. And I think that certainly for an embedded system, like a phone, I think that's a terrific way to go. I don't know how well I've managed to pull it off, but I think it's a great base to build upon.
And it's a version one, you know, so I'll cut them some slack. But it does look interesting, especially with the different layers they built into it.
Yeah. I mean, I would cut them a lot more slack if this had been 2 years ago, but whatever. Hopefully they've got their act together now. Where can people buy your book?
Well, last I checked, it was on Amazon, on Overstock, on BarnesandNoble.com. They can also drop me a line through my blog on an email. Mm-hmm. Just write code.
It's my understanding that if you buy 4 copies, you can combine them together into a transformer. Is that the case?
Yes, and it will deliver water with your new homemade shelter that you can build from the books. In fact, I encourage you to buy lots of books because you just never know.
It's the ultimate survivalist thing. You can build a shelter out of it, and it will turn seawater into drinkable water.
That's right. And they're sort of like plastic coated, so they're kind of like waterproof.
Yeah, it's insulation you can read.
And you always fashion a shiv from the hardcover edition.
You could, absolutely.
100% zombie apocalypse proof.
It's a good deal, yeah.
I actually do encourage everyone to have a 3-day supply pack ready, a bug out bag, because you never know. I mean, I live in a tornado alley right now, actually, is where I'm in.
Oh, that would do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we've had one tornado that just went down the highway. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. In fact, Renee, I think I sent out a message that day and said, if I survive the tornado, I'll finish the build. And
I can just see her coding on the back of a pickup as they're driving away from the tornado.
Yeah,
it was crazy. I have never been that close to a tornado before in my life. You know, I've seen them on TV. Twister was one of my favorite movies, as a matter of fact. And the trees were sideways. The sky was every bit of green you hear on, you know, in the movies. And it was amazing. And when just before the warning went off, this will tell you how much of a geek I am. I sent all my important stuff to Dropbox.
finish the sink.
Yeah, that's kind of how it sounded. And then within minutes, the tornado warning went off, and you know, grabbed the kids out of bed and threw them. We don't have a storm shelter here, so we do have an interior bathroom. But right outside the bathroom, we've got our 3-day packs, and you know, it was scary, but it synced to Dropbox, and I was happy.
The Dropbox got the kids, got the 3-day packs. Bring it.
Yeah, we were good.
That just makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think the worst that Vinay and I have is like an ice storm where we'll, you know, lose power for a few days, but it's not quite as instantaneously destructive as something like a tornado or a hurricane.
Disasters, you know, are more passive aggressive.
It's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
When we lived in New Jersey, that storm, you know, the one that JCP&L got really hammered on, we were without power for 9 days. And for someone who's into technology as much as I am, we took every bit of electronics we had, the iPads, the iPhones, the Androids, the computers. We went to my brother's house who still had power. We charged everything up and then we went home to nothing. It was darkness. Luckily we had one zone of the house that had a free propane heater attached to the wall. So we all huddled in the four of us, me, my husband, the two kids and the two dogs and the hamsters. We had hamsters at the time and a goldfish. And the only light that we had was glowing from our devices. But it was nice. You know, we didn't really play a whole lot of games because it took too much resources, but we were able to read. You know, we had a Kindle there. But it does really snap you back to reality when you think about how much we rely on these devices and this technology. And then when you don't have it, and we didn't have it for 9 days, it's kind of crazy. You know, we had to think about, is it really that important to watch this on Netflix or to play Plants vs. Zombies? Or maybe we should just read a book together and talk about what was in the book, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting. But yeah, tornadoes, no. Power, much better.
Right.
All right, awesome. So Tammy, where can people find out more about you? You said your website, you're also on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, paradox927 on Twitter. You can check out my website at justwritecode.net.
And for the work you do, you're at nickelfish.com?
Nickelfish.com. If you guys need a website or any type of development, code of the best, go to Nickelfish. And I swear, I'm not saying that just because I work there. I have never, ever worked at a company for this long that I still continue to love and call home.
Except for Seth, right? You don't care for him.
Well, once I stabbed him, we're fine. The relationship healed right up, you know. I don't know about that wound, but the relationship is fine.